Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, March 23rd, 2013. This is episode 963. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rackspace, the open cloud company. At Rackspace, build what you want, where you want, how you want. All backed by their world-renowned fanatical support. Try it today. Download the open cloud at rackspace.com/open. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's a time to talk all about the tech. If you've got a question about computers or the internet, if you're trying to decide what digital camera to buy, if you're interested in a cell phone but you can't figure out which is the best one out there for you, well, this is what we do here. It's my specialité each and every weekend right here. Yeah, the phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. But now, we have lots of listeners thanks to the internet. So if you're calling, if you're listening over the internet and in overseas, we have lots of listeners. Well, we have lots of listeners inside the country, too. But you overseas folks, here's what you do overseas. Is Canada overseas? I don't think so. Over 49th parallel. Overseas is a funny word. International. How about that, listeners? You can use your Skype and call 1-888-827-5536, and you can join us anywhere, toll free. Cost you nothing. Wow. I thought I'd be talking about this today, but Apple fixed it. There was a little fracas, a little brouhaha, a little to-do over Apple security this last couple of days. So on Thursday, Apple does something good. They roll out what we call two-factor authentication. And this is a good thing. Your bank may have it. Google has it. Lots of places are adding this now as we have more and more problems with bad guys breaking into our systems. One of the real vulnerabilities is the security question. You know, oh, I forgot my password. No problem. Just tell us the street you grew up on and your birth date and you're in. Actually, in Apple's case, it wasn't even that. Just tell us your email address and your birth date and we'll fix that password for you. No problem. We'll reset that password. Oopsies. That's kind of first of all, people's birth dates are not a secret in most cases. You can find my birth date on Wikipedia, but even if you're not on Wikipedia, your birth date is often on Facebook and all sorts of places, and probably pretty easy to guess that email address. In fact, that might be on Facebook as well. So Apple had to take down the I Forgot site yesterday. They added this really great two-factor authentication, but then they blew it, and for considerable amount of time, at least 24 hours, pretty much anybody who knew your birthday and your email address could get access to your iCloud account, which means everything. Your iTunes, they could gift themselves iTunes stuff. They could, I don't think they get any cash out of it. Well, maybe with some sort of convoluted purchase a computer, return it policy, or purchase a computer and sell it possibly, something like that. Now, two-step verification is good. So what happened is Apple implemented that. And if you were lucky enough to have turned that on, you were fine. It was the people who didn't turn it on, people like me who went there and all of a sudden, I don't know what the secret questions are, so I sent the password reset. By the way, Apple, interestingly enough, they really screwed it up for me. I'm kind of out of luck. They have my right email address, but for some reason on the password reset, it's wrong. So I got a notification that I had changed my birthday, because I did. I thought, well, at least if I make up a birthday, it'll be a little harder to guess. But I didn't get the password reset. I don't know how many people got bit by this. Apple immediately, when it was revealed, took down the I Forgot site for 24 hours. It's back up, fixed, apparently. So you should probably go in there and turn on two-factor authentication. Let me talk about what two-factor is and why this is a good thing. Authentication, that is proving you are who you are, involves one of three different techniques. There's the most common, which is something you know, like a password or the answer to a secret question. That's something you know, right? That's one possible factor. Second factor would be something you have. A key, a physical key, would be something you have. A note from the king would be something you have to prove who you are. In the case of the digital era, something you have might be your smartphone or a dongle. You know, you've seen those little footballs that PayPal and VeriSign were sending out that would generate one-time codes. Or I have a little credit card size thing from VeriSign, generates a one-time code. That's something I have. The cell phone's a really good one. Everybody has one. We carry it around all the time. So Google Authenticator, Blizzard has an authenticator. These generate codes that only you can generate. So the bad guy would have to have two things with two-factor authentication. Something you know, your password, plus this one-time code generated by your phone. Facebook's doing that now, too. There is a third factor, and really, if you want it super secure, you could do the third factor, which is something you are. So to recap, something you know, like a password, something you have, like your cell phone, something you are, like your fingerprint, a thumbprint, iris scan. In the most secure situations, we might want all three. No one is perfect. A letter from the king could be forged. Somebody could guess or know your password. You could have as we've seen, a rubber thumb with your thumbprint on it. But the likelihood of having two or three, you know, gets lower each time. So it's a really fairly secure. And I encourage you to turn this on Google for sure. Turn it on Apple the minute they allow you to do it. Turn it on your bank for sure. I turn it on wherever I can. It's a little bit inconvenient because you have to have something. I wish everybody would use Google Authenticator. LastPass does, Google does. I wish more would use that because that's great. I have that. It's a little program on your phone. It algorithmically generates a six-digit code and changes it every 60 seconds. The knowledge of the six-digit code is limited to you, basically, or anybody looking over your shoulder. But again, that's only one. If you've got two factors, they would also have to know your password. See how nice that works out? So Apple was, you know, this was cool. Had Apple had this two-factor authentication and no back door with the secret questions, then our friend Matt Honan, who got hacked a few months ago and lost everything, wouldn't have been hacked. There is one thing you could, if you got your iCloud account got compromised, that would be kind of scary. They can wipe your phone and your computer if you have it attached to Find My iPhone. They could just wipe the data contents. That's what they did to Matt, poor Matt. He's on his computer. All of a sudden, it's remotely erased. The hack that got Matt was a little more complicated, but it was done by a 16-year-old, which makes it kind of depressing. The 16-year-old was very good at what we call social engineering. He called Amazon. All of this has been since fixed, but the problem is now what's new? And these 16-year-olds, you know, they got lots of time to figure this stuff out, so they're always trying. They're banging on this stuff, trying to find new ways in. This 16-year-old called Amazon and said, I'd like to add a credit card to my account. And at the time, Amazon, they said, oh, yeah, sure. Sure. Glad to do it. What's your account email? You give them the email. They say, yeah, okay, we'll add that credit card. Okay, now you're not going to use that credit card for anything, but you have the last four digits. Now you call Apple. And at the time, Apple only required the last four digits of your credit card number and your email. They've already got the email. And they were able to get into Matt's Apple email. And then once they were in that, they were able to get into everything else because Matt had, as you probably do, his passwords. If he forgot what's the email address you use when you forget a password? Yeah, if somebody gets that email address, boy, you're in trouble. Then they go to Twitter and say, I forgot the password. And you go to Twitter. You get that email. He's a bad guy. And you say, good, I've got his Twitter account. And on and on and on. So Apple, good on you. If they had that second factor authentication, this probably wouldn't have worked. There's always that human factor, though, right? That's the thing that always scares me. Whenever I see, forget your password, forget your key, don't have your phone, well, we can help. That worries me. Turn it on anyway. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your call's next. Home theater expert Scott Wilkinson coming up 33 and a half after the hour on the Tech Guy Show. Right now, let's get to the phone, starting with Bert in Orange County. Hi, Bert. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Bert.
Hello, Leo. Thanks for taking my call today.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for being our first caller of the day. You win the prize. Leo is not punch drunk yet. I might actually have an answer.
All right. My wife and I are planning on taking a trip to Europe this fall. And she's given me permission to buy a DSLR camera.
Well, now, isn't she kind?
Yes.
So,
she is very kind.
So your goal is to take better pictures?
Yes. I currently have a little 8-megapixel point-and-shoot type of camera, and that's just not going to cut it for this trip.
Yeah. Well,
so,
you know,
I'm looking at the Canon T3i.
I would actually, I don't know if it's out yet. There's a new Canon DSLR that is smaller. See, one of the problems with DSLRs is how big they are, right? And by the way, remember, the cost of the body and in your first lens is only the beginning. Because you're going to buy more lenses. That's the whole point of a DSLR, is interchangeable lenses. Canon, right. Now, what is your trip?
It'll be in October.
Oh, you got time. So Canon has just announced two new cameras, the T5i, and this is the one I'm interested in, the Rebel SL1. It is, they say, the world's smallest digital SLR. SLR means single lens reflex. It means that when you look through the viewfinder on the camera, you're looking through the lens. And pros like that because they're seeing exactly what the shot's going to look like. Change the lens, it'll change your point of view. You'll see the depth of field. You see how dark or light it is. So there's a lot to be said for that. I like DSLRs, although lately I've switched to a new format. I have a 5D, which is a DSLR, and I've switched to a new format, the mirrorless Micro Four Thirds, and I've been really loving it. So here's what I would say. You got a lot of time. I would say get that camera soon because you want to practice with it. You want to learn it.
Exactly.
We're going to Italy in September, so I've already purchased the camera that I am planning to take with me on the trip to Italy, which is Micro Four Thirds. And this is one you might want to look at as well, the Olympus OMD. It is a very thin, very light, because it doesn't have a prism. It doesn't have mirrors, so it can be a much more compact camera than even the SL1. And it gives you excellent images. And it does have interchangeable lenses, and the lenses are less expensive, and I think some very good lenses available for Micro Four Thirds. So that's one to think about, which is...
Okay, now I'm assuming that all these cameras are novice friendly.
Yeah, this camera is going to be no harder. The Olympus is going to be no harder to use than your point and shoot. They have a program mode. You just press and take a button. But as you get more proficient, you have more capabilities going down the road.
Got it.
The Olympus OMD kit with the kit lens, and the kit lens is a very, I think, a very appropriate 14 to 50, which is, by the way, on these cameras, this may be more information than you require. I'll say this quickly. Don't worry about it. There's a crop factor. You multiply the lens length by 2. So 14 to 50 is equivalent of 28 to 100 on a full-frame DSLR. That's exactly what you want. 28 is a little bit wide. 100 is a little bit long. Gives you a nice range, perfect for travel. That will set you back, though, $1,200. Not cheap. None of these are cheap.
Yeah, that's a little bit above my budget.
More than you want to spend. Well, the good news about the T5i coming out is the T3i will be less expensive. That's an excellent camera. When you choose your camera, you're in effect choosing what kinds of lenses you're going to get going forward. Choose Canon, you'll be buying Canon lenses for the most part. Choose Nikon, you'll be buying Nikon for the most part. Either one of those is fine. The Olympus Micro Four Thirds, many manufacturers make those, and they're excellent too. So you couldn't go wrong in that regard. But just understand, you'll be you'll be going with that. The SL, the super lightweight, does work with most with all Canon EOS lenses. It is a sequel to the T3i. The SL1 is going to retail for $650 for the body, $800 with an 18-55 lens. The T5i 750 is a little more expensive, $900 with the lens. However, the good news is because of these new ones coming out, you'll probably see drops in the T3 and the T4. So I the T3i, excellent camera. If it's in your price range, I wouldn't hesitate. And here's the good news. In next year or the year after, if you get serious about this, you'll keep all the lenses you've purchased. Those investments will still be good, and you can put a new body on it.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's the real argument for buying interchangeable lens cameras, is that you can spend money on the glass, the lenses, and as the bodies get more sophisticated and you get more sophisticated, you can upgrade those. Another one to look at is the Nikon D3200, which is also excellent.
Okay. Now, should I be looking at any type of accessories, like, I guess, battery chargers and things of that nature?
I would say all you need to do, get the kit lens, which will have a good range of length, so you have a variety of options. Get an extra, they never come with a memory, so get two memory cards. Two high-quality, fast memory cards, and get an extra battery, because having two batteries is great. Then you're out, you're walking. Where are you going?
We're going to start in London, and then we'll go to Paris, and then we're going
Fantastic.
To go to Rome.
Oh, so you're walking past the Colosseum. You've been out all day, and suddenly your battery dies. You don't want to miss that shot. So you pull your extra battery out, and you pop it in. Eventually, you want to buy more lenses. You do not need, and I don't recommend they'll try to sell you a filter for that lens. Don't put it on there. Why put a $5 or $10 filter on a $100 lens? It just ruins it. But you will want a lens hood. They almost always come with lens hoods. That kind of protects it as well as keeps the light out, the sunlight from the side out. I think all you really need is a second battery and two memory cards. I like 32 gigs. You probably don't need to go bigger than that. You can get bigger, but you put too much on a card, you're risking... if that car dies, more pictures. So for me, 32 gigs is a sweet spot.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Have a great trip.
Thanks very much, Leo.
Maybe I'll see you in Rome. I'll be passing through. have a great one. I appreciate the call. It is a good idea. I mean, I did the same thing. 3 or 4 months before you go on a big trip, it's wonderful to have a good camera and be able to take great pictures. By the way, all the cameras I mentioned will also shoot video, so you don't need a separate video camera. The video they shoot is superb. And I do recommend taking short, not long, but short little 6 seconds. When I say short, little videos in between your stills. Because when you get back, it's wonderful to have a little bit of motion. You could put together a little computer slideshow that has stills and then occasional video with sound. It just brings it to life. And my good friend Ray Maxwell, who's a professional photographer, wonderful fella, told me, this little tip, he says, if you shoot video, shoot 6 seconds and think of it not as trying to tell a story, but as just little vignettes, just like your photos. And when I've done that, I've been so happy. You're going to have a great trip. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's our home theater guru, the man in charge of all the editorial content at the AVS Forum. That's a new gig for Scott. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Also writes for really the Secrets of Home Theater and Hi-Fi at HomeTheaterHiFi.com, and he does a podcast for us called Home Theater Geeks every Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv. Well,
it
there.
It keeps me busy.
What? What?
It keeps me busy.
Yes. So what do you want to talk about today?
Well, I thought I would talk about a question that I get an awful lot. On AVS Forum, a lot of people ask this question, and I get it in my Scott at TechGuyLabs.com mailbox as well, which is, should I buy a 4K TV?
Oh, not now. Go check the price first, then ask the question. How much? Yes. First of all, you can buy them, right? Sony's got them.
You can. Yep. Sony's got one. Samsung just announced. Well, they announced it at CES, but they also showed it just last week at their line show in New York. A 4K, 84-inch 4K TV.
Oh, I would love that.
Sure. If you got $40,000 to spend.
Oh, $40,000. $40,000. $40,000 American.
Yes, okay. Not lira, not pesos.
Not lira. I can handle that. Dollars. No, dollars. Yeah, that's not gonna work. And how much is the Sony? It's like $25,000.
It's $25,000. And the good thing about the Sony is you get with that a media server, basically a PC dedicated to serving movies to that TV, and it's preloaded with like 10 movies in native 4K.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
Which is pretty nice. Plus,
how many movies?
10.
Plus then what?
Some other
then
eye
what?
Candy stuff. Then they will no. That's not the end of it. They will send you once in a while.
Yeah.
On some regular basis. I don't know what. A Blu-ray data disc, very important to distinguish between that and the Blu-ray video disc that most people buy at the store. This is a Blu-ray, a BD-ROM, a data disc with a 4K movie on it that you throw into this computer and it loads it onto its hard drive. And then you can watch that new movie on this new 4K display. Now, I should point out, make sure that everybody understands what 4K means.
Oh, yeah. We've just kind of been going along with it.
I know. Yeah. It's easy to sort of forget.
Well, we talk about it so much, but okay, yes.
We do. But I think it's worth repeating.
Okay.
That the standard for high-definition TV, what people now have on their flat panels and in their houses and in their projectors for the most part, is called 1080p. And that what that means is 1920 pixels left to right, 1080 pixels up and down. And the P stands for progressive, which is a sort of a technical term. I don't really need to go into it right now. Suffice to say that we're talking about pixel resolution. So 1920 pixels across by 1080 pixels, 1080 up and down. 4K basically multiplies that by 4. So you get 4 times as many pixels. In fact, it's 3,840 pixels across by 2,160 pixels up and down, which is equivalent to exactly 4 of what we now call high definition panels in a quadrant, basically in a 4. It's basically a very high resolution image, exactly 4 times the number of pixels that you have now. 2.2 million pixels in current TVs versus 8.8 million pixels in the new 4K TVs. Now, that's, that significantly increases the detail and the resolution in the picture, but the human eye is only limited. It's limited in how much detail it can perceive, any of us can perceive as human beings. And if you sit far enough back from a 4K display, you won't see any greater detail than you do on a current 1080p or high definition TV. By the way, 4K is also often known as Ultra HD or UHD. So you'll see that phrase sometimes too.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, how far back are you sitting? How big is the screen? In order to answer the question, will you see a difference? Now, you and I have both seen 4K displays at various trade shows, at CES and at NAB and so on. And even the smaller screens, there is a qualitative difference that you can see, I think. You would agree with me. I've heard you say it, that you look at a picture, even if you're far enough away that you theoretically can't see the difference between 4K and high definition.
There's something. Listening, those people who say analog music somehow just magically sounds better than digital.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about that, but I could definitely say this is true. And people even said, oh, retina display doesn't mean anything if you're, sitting far enough away. It does. There's something going on,
and I don't know exactly what it is yet.
It may be in our heads, but there's something going on.
Well, there's something going on.
Yeah.
There are some other issues that need to be addressed too, which is why I say to people who say, should I buy a 4K TV now? My answer is basically no. There are other standards that have not yet been established. For example, how is that 4K content going to get to you?
Well, that's the big one, isn't it?
It's the big one.
Yeah.
Because there we saw at CES some demonstrations of terrestrial broadcasting, over-the-air broadcasting with a rooftop antenna, essentially. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We saw an example of streaming. Netflix has announced it's going to be streaming 4K.
Yeah, but who has bandwidth enough to see it?
Exactly. Well, yeah. There are new codecs. CODEC, coder decoder, which are the compression algorithms that take data and squeeze it down into a smaller shape, a smaller amount that can then be transmitted over the internet or over the air or onto a disk. And these new codecs are much more efficient than the current ones, which means that the 4K content can be squeezed down quite a bit more than current technology allows. But those aren't finalized. Well, they're sort of finalized, but they haven't decided which one are they going to use for broadcasting or streaming or putting on a Blu-ray disc. Getting an optical disc to store 4K, Blu-ray currently can't do it. I mean, it has 50 gigabytes of space, and people point to this BDXL recordable format. You must know about that.
BDXL.
Hmm. Yes, it's a recordable Blu-ray format, and it offers 100 gigabytes or 128 gigabytes on four layers. So the laser.
So it'd be the same disc.
It would be the same
using
disc.
Currently, huh?
Correct. However, it's the same size disc anyway, right. But it's only in recordable write once or read write formats. It's not in a ROM format. It's not in a stamped out format that they can replicate in a big factory and then distribute to consumers as a read only format. So the Blu-ray Disc Association is thinking at least about coming up with a disc format that will work with 4K.
Don't the Red folks have a Red Ray, they call it,
yes.
That is a high
yes.
quality. What do you think of that? Do you know anything about that?
I do. It's in fact, they're taking pre-orders, which means that it's probably going to be available pretty soon. That is, in fact, a 4K streaming media server device, like the Sony device.
See, because they make 4K cameras, so it's in their interest, right?
Yes, exactly right. And so they do. They make this thing called Red Ray. It's a little box, little one rack space. Looks kind of like a DVD player. And you can load content into it from memory sticks like SD cards and so on. And it will play 4K content to a 4K display. But it's not available yet. Well, and no one that I know has actually played with it. So, I mean, I assume it's going to be good because the Red cameras are great.
Yeah.
People, you know, the professionals use Red cameras all the time.
Oh, yeah. In fact, The Hobbit was filmed with Red cameras.
Exactly. Exactly. And I believe, in fact, I just went and saw Oz the Great and Powerful, and that was filmed on Red as well. They said that in the credits.
Scott Wilkinson, HomeTheaterHiFi.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
You bet.
Even the sound effects are in 3D. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Back to the phones. We go Martino in Orange County. We got two in a row from OC. Hey, Martino. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo. Can you hear me?
I hear you great. Welcome.
All righty. I spoke to you a couple of times back when Luis was on your board there.
Back in the old days.
Yeah. I called a few years ago, back when I started a computer business teaching kids computers with laptops.
Yeah. Are you still doing that, Martino?
Yeah, but now I've upgraded to iPads also.
I think very smart. Kids love the iPad.
So I have about six of them, six or seven, and I've talked to Apple about it and their ISO programmers and everything, and they have no solution.
What's the problem?
You know, on when you're doing laptops, as long as all your laptops are the same and they have the same chipset and everything, you can install everything on one and image it and then just knock them all out at once.
Right.
Well, I'm trying to find a solution to do all my iPads the same way because I have to sync them one at a time and I have over 300 apps and the memory just... So it's like 2 or 3 weeks worth of work just to get all six iPads to have the same apps on them.
There is a program called Apple Configurator. I'm surprised Apple didn't tell you this. Because
I'm surprised. because they thought my question was very...
You know what they thought you wanted to do is pirate software.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Configurator probably will not let you do that. You probably have to have a license for each device. But the idea for Configurator is for businesses or schools to quickly deploy iPads or iPod touches or iPhones, configuring large numbers of devices with the settings, apps, and data you specify for students, employees, or customers. I just read that off the Apple webpage. So I can't believe Apple, these guys at Apple didn't say, well, yeah, we've got the Apple Configurator. But, you know, there will be license issues. You know, I don't know exactly how they handle that. You have to buy a copy of the app for each machine. But this Configurator, now, it works on OS X Lion. Do you have a Mac?
No, I have a PC, but I have two Apple laptops. I actually have the old G4, and I have the Intel one with the highest operating system.
Okay.
I can go is, I think, was the, not, what's the newest one?
The Mountain Lion's the newest, but this needs Lion, the one previous to Mountain Lion. So if you can get Lion on it, you can use it.
One I have, yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Then that's what you'll do. So just search for Apple Configurator.
Uh-huh.
That's you know, Apple wants this thing to be a success in business and schools, they have to offer Apple Configurator.
And know? Even our IT department with the school district that I still currently work with, they have no...
This is on the app. You know, if you go to the Apple in Education page, there's a tutorial on how to use it. So this is exactly what you want. Now, I don't know what the cost is, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if it's prohibitively expensive. And, you know, I'm sure you have to buy licenses for any of the software that you use. But this is Apple has a program to do this. And for that, you know, I don't understand why they didn't tell you that, except that they, you know, obviously, and this is where the paranoia about piracy just galls me. They thought you were looking for a way to pirate software, obviously. And so somebody should spank the genius you talk to and maybe get them some training so that they know about Apple Configurator. Almost every portable device, every phone, they have this because, you know, you're not – for precisely this reason. You think it's bad to install 6 iPads with the same stuff. Imagine 600 or 6,000. Businesses do this all the time. This is not an unusual or oddball request. And I suggest you find a better a better genius next time. You know, there is at every Apple store, in fact, this is probably the person you should talk to, a Apple business expert. And they would certainly know about this and the issues involved. Hey, good on you, Martino, for what you're doing. I think that's great. And if, you know, if it costs a few $100, then, you know, have a bake sale or something. I know that money is tight. It's always going to be tight on something like this. Wynn is on the line from Moore Park, California, our next caller of the day. Hi, Wynn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Wynn.
Hello, Wynn.
He put the phone down, unfortunately, but we'll get him back. How about Carnegie in North Hollywood, California? Is that right, Carnegie?
Yes, it is. Thanks for taking my call,
Thanks
Leo.
For calling, Carnegie.
I have a question about Gmail, if that's okay.
Why wouldn't it be okay? Of course.
Well, I
talk about everything.
All right. I love it. and I get it through Apple Mail. I recently...
Wait a minute. Hold on. Oh, okay. You're using Apple Mail on your computer to download your Gmail. I got it. I do that too, by the way. That's good.
Coming in through Apple Mail.
Yeah, using the IMAP protocol. That's a good way to do it. Yeah.
Yes. I recently got an email from a Google account. It's a couple of short paragraphs. Can I read it?
Yeah, quickly. Yeah, we got about a minute and a half.
Okay. Someone recently tried to use an application to sign into your Google account.
Yes.
And it gives my email address.
Yes.
We prevented the sign-in attempt
yes.
in case this was a hijacker trying to access your account.
That's
please
legit, by the way. Google does this, and it's really great that Google does this. They pay attention to suspicious behavior.
It looks really authentic to me right off the bat.
Yeah.
It says, please review the details of the sign-in attempt. They give the date, the IP address, and location unknown. If you don't recognize the sign-in attempt, someone else might be trying to access your account. You
That's
should
right.
sign into your account and reset your password immediately,
so,
which I did.
Here's what I would do. Here's what everybody with Gmail should do. At the very bottom of your inbox, it'll show your last account activity, and it'll show details. And you click that details link. It will show all the logins for the last, I don't know, few days, where they came from and what applications were used. So I have TripIt, OneReceipt. Those are two applications that scan my email. You got to look at these periodically, and you can revoke permission for these applications if you didn't give them permission. You want to know who's accessing your Gmail. And this is a really nice feature that Google offers. So that message was just Google saying, wait, thought this was a little suspicious. Facebook does this now, too. They'll say, somebody logged into your Facebook account from a new device we've never seen before. Was that you?
But Leo, are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, when I attempted to reset my password, I was told I couldn't since my Gmail address was already used. Well, obviously, yes, it's mine. So I created a new Gmail account and password.
Okay.
Added it to Apple Mail, and each time I wake up my Mac, Apple Mail asks for my Gmail password, but it's asking for my original Gmail address password.
So you need to delete the old Gmail account. None of the mail that goes to your old account will go to your new account. You know that, right?
I was going to do that, but won't I lose all the mail?
No, it'll still be on Gmail. Of course, you can't log in because you don't know your password.
Yeah, but if, all right.
But no, Gmail doesn't delete it if you delete the account from Apple Mail. That's the beauty of IMAP. The mail stays on the server. You need to recover that old Gmail account. I'll tell you some tips coming up after the break. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you want to find out what I've talked about. Get links to the sites I mentioned and so forth. You can do that at techguylabs.com. You'll also find a link there to our wonderful chat room. Lots of people there to kibitz, ask questions, answer questions, and yes, help me answer questions. So we really appreciate everybody in the chat room. It's really nice to have them here. TechGuyLabs.com. You'll find a link to the chat room. So this is a topic near and dear to my heart, is securing yourself online. Because so much of what we do is online, and more all the time. And as companies like Apple and Microsoft, Google, push us towards using the cloud. By the way, the cloud, you probably hear that term all the time. Is that confusing? It probably is. It's not very communicative. It doesn't really explain what it is. It comes from the fact that when people diagram computer systems and networks, whenever they want to show the internet, they draw a puffy little cloud. The reason is the internet's kind of a black box. You can't diagram it. It's too complex. So if you're, you know, making a picture of the computer network at your work, and of course there's a connection to the internet, that internet's just a little puffy cloud. And you know what that means. It means it's out there, and it's of kind of amorphous morphology. It has kind of an unknown structure. Puffy little cloud. So, but what I say when I say we store stuff in the cloud, what I'm really saying is we are putting more and more of our data on somebody else's server out there, whether it's pictures on Facebook, email on Google or Yahoo, using SkyDrive to store work documents, using Google Docs. Much of our vital data is out there. And there's two issues, of course. There's the issue of keeping it private, but more importantly, the issue of keeping it secure. Not in the sense that somebody's going to read it, but somebody's going to steal your account. You're going to lose access to your account. If you lose access to your Gmail account, that could be a disaster. This thing I talked about last hour with Apple really screwing up security on its iCloud, huge potential problem. Because iCloud not only represents a place that people store their data, but it's also how you buy stuff from iTunes. It's also Apple Mail. And if you use Apple Mail, as many do, as your primary mail, that not only gives people access to your email, but may give them access to more, because many sites like Twitter and Facebook allow you to reset your password by sending you an email. So if you forget your password, you know, you see this all the time. Logins, you know, name, password, and underneath it a little link. Did you forget your password? Because people forget their passwords all the time. Click that link, and one of two things will pop up. Either you'll get some questions about stuff in theory only you know, secret questions, or you'll get a link that says, well, we will send you your password to your registered email address. Is that okay? Yeah, it's fine, unless a bad guy has compromised your registered email address, and then you could really be in trouble, because it could be a domino, a cascade. So it's really important that you kind of think about this as you set things up, and most importantly, that you really secure your accounts. Now, I do like Gmail, Google's email solution, because Google spent some time thinking about security and has provided a lot of nice features. We mentioned, as we were wrapping up the hour last hour, our caller said, I got an email from Google saying somebody had accessed my account from an application and asking me if this was okay. Good. It's good that Google did that. Unfortunately, he kind of panicked and perhaps inappropriately so maybe has lost access to his account. You shouldn't be panicked by that email, but you should read it carefully and try to remember, did I authorize Facebook to get stuff from my Google account? Did I log into a new phone or set up a phone with Gmail? Those are the kinds of things that will trigger that email. The email is not to say, oh, panic, run around like a chicken with your head cut off. No, the email is to say, hey, just, and Facebook does this too, heads up, somebody accessed your account from a new system we hadn't seen before. We thought we'd let you know. And if that's okay, don't worry about it. I did mention, and I'm going to talk a little bit about securing Gmail, but you should, you know, many of the same features will work in other systems, Facebook particularly. So I did mention at the bottom of your Gmail email, you'll see last account activity, what time it was, and a details link. And the details link is so helpful because it shows you the internet addresses and the applications that last accessed Gmail. And that window is something you should probably look at every few weeks just to make sure that you're the only one accessing your email. Authorized applications, make sure those are applications that you said yes to, and you can revoke authorization. For instance, I see my browser, Safari, accessed Gmail a minute ago. Yeah, that's right. I see that BB IMAP accessed Gmail 10 minutes ago. That's my BlackBerry phone. Yeah, that's right. I see that TripIt, a website that looks through my email for travel confirmations. I gave it permission to do that, so that's okay. You want to check and make sure these are all things that you permitted. You can change the alerts. You see it says show an alert for unusual activity. You can change that. But there's even better settings. For instance, I can say what countries are allowed to access my Gmail. Now, if you don't go to China, make sure China is not on that list. That way, no one from China can access your Gmail. And if you travel a lot, you might want to think about that a little bit. But that's a really nice security feature. I also would encourage you to turn on something that Google calls second-factor authentication. Actually, Google calls it two-step authentication. We talked about this last hour. The idea that in addition to your Google password, you need some more information to access your Google account. Turn that on. It's a little bit of an inconvenience, but it does secure your system considerably. And then very important is to attach a cell phone to your Google account. And this will be a way that if somebody does somehow hack your Google account and change the password, this is your great fear, right? Somebody gets into your Google account. Maybe they hijack some other email or whatever, but they change the password. If they do that, you've lost control of the account. But Google has a feature, and you absolutely must turn this on, that you can recover your email via your cell phone, that they'll send you a text message, or they'll send you, or they'll actually, a robot will call you and give you the chance to reset your password via your cell phone. That means unless the bad guy got your cell phone too, you have a way to get your account back. It doesn't have to be a cell phone. SwapRat says, well, I don't have a cell phone. It can be a landline. It can be any phone number. Google, a robot will call you and say, we are resetting your password. Here is the code. And then that's really important. Doing that will keep somebody from hijacking your account. Now, you should still check to see if somebody's got your password. Maybe it's just reading your Gmail. That would be bad, right? But if somebody takes over your account, and this happens all the time, it's really nice to have this backdoor that only you can use because only you have your cell phone, right? Highly recommended. Facebook has some security features. Turn on if there's second-factor authentication in your bank. Turn it on. Yes, it's inconvenient, but there is a trade-off. There's a direct trade-off between security and convenience. And I would submit, maybe you don't care if somebody gets your Twitter account. Maybe that's not important. Maybe you don't care if, you know, somebody gets your American Greetings card account. Then don't worry about it so much. But your bank, your email, these things are really important. You want to lock it down. Again, Prizilla by Chilla, you don't have to have a cell phone to do this. Any phone number will work. Any phone number will work. So highly, highly recommend that you turn these features on. And then, if the worst happens, at least there's a way out. And second-factor authentication, two thumbs up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, that's the number, 888-827-5536. Website is techguylabs.com. Let's go back to the phones here, and I think Ralph in Torrance has been hanging on the longest. Hi, Ralph, Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you doing?
Good. A couple of weeks ago, you were telling us you bought a Sano soundbar, and you were going to tell us how it worked.
Yeah, except I haven't set it up yet. I'm so sorry. I bought it for my friend, Lisa, and she needs it because she doesn't want to put 5.1 surround in her bedroom, but she wants decent sound. Now, the Sonos soundbar, like a lot of other soundbars, is designed for a HD TV to give you simulated surround sounds. It has, I'm not sure how many speakers, a number of speakers in there. And the theory being using a computer technology and binaural imaging that they can kind of trick your ears and think that sound is coming from all the way around you. I've never experienced a soundbar that does a great job of that, but it might, if you don't have the option, the best way is to put in 5 or 7 speakers and a subwoofer. But that's a lot of wiring, a lot of expense, and for people that's... that may be more than they want to do. Soundbars sound good. You might want to add a sub to this. Sonos does offer a sub. It's expensive. Subwoofer is about $600 or $700 from Sonos. The advantage of the soundbar from Sonos versus, say, a Bose or a Onkyo or a variety of other companies make soundbars is that it's also a Sonos system. And Sonos is I'm a big fan of Sonos, even though it's very pricey. It's a system that lets you put music in every room using their own proprietary wireless technology. And so you can play music from your computer, but you can also play Pandora or Spotify or RDO. You can play Intune internet radio, so you can listen to pretty much any radio station. I use it as my alarm clock. I have Sonos speakers in every room of my house. So it's a really great way of putting audio everywhere. And the Sonos soundbar is a full Sonos. So, and it's one of the reasons I got it for Lisa, because she can listen to, she loves Pandora, for instance. So she can listen to Pandora on her Sonos soundbar in addition, you know, when she's not watching TV.
So. You also, since you didn't hook that up, mentioned that Time Warner, you can go through a Roku box and get Time Warner wirelessly.
Now, this is intriguing too. So the new Roku 3, which just came out, has a Time Warner app. And I wouldn't be surprised to see other companies do this. You need to have a Time Warner cable account.
Which I do.
But you may not want to buy a cable box for every room.
Right.
Let's say you have a TV in the, you know, in the pantry and you want to get Time Warner programming on that. Well, I haven't tried it, but according to the article I read on TechCrunch and the reviews of this Roku 3, you install the app, you log into your Time Warner account, and not only can you see on-demand shows, you can see live TV.
Is it HD?
Sure.
Oh, great.
Sure. So this is, I love the Roku 3.
So it's the Roku 3.
Yeah.
How much is the Roku 3?
$100. It's their just came out. It's their latest Roku. It has another feature I particularly like. The remote control has a headphone jack.
Oh, great.
So my mom's coming to visit me. She's 80. She's a little hard of hearing. She likes the TV really loud.
Right.
So I'm putting the Roku in her room, which it does have a cable box, so I'm not saving any money on that. But now she can watch Netflix or Hulu Plus and have the headphones plugged into the remote and turn it up as loud as she wants. Won't bother me or anybody else in the house. It's really cool.
Right.
Yeah. I think the Time Warner app may work on other Rokus. In fact, somebody in the chat room says the Roku 2 does support the Time Warner app. I would guess it works on all of them. But you might as well, if you're going to buy a Roku, get the newest.
Right. Well, hopefully in a couple of weeks, you'll have that soundbar hooked up.
I'm sorry, Ralph. I apologize. I will. The minute I'll hook it up tonight. The minute I hook it up, I'll come back on the air and I'll give you my review. You know, I'm pretty sure it's going to sound great. Sonos stuff. I've never had a problem with the quality of the sound. The only issue is its cost. The play bar is $700, which...
Now, you have to plug it into the wall, correct? Because it has little power amps.
Of course, it has power, and you'll want to connect it to your Sonos network, either wirelessly or wired. So if you've got an Ethernet jack near there, that can become the base unit for your Sonos network. Otherwise, you'll need to get a Sonos bridge that's hooked up to your Ethernet, wherever that is, because that's how you get it online.
With your Sonos, correct?
Pardon me?
Only if you want to use it with your Sonos.
Yeah.
Right. You don't have
it. And there, you know, I've tried the Bose soundbar is $2,500, and I'm underwhelmed given the cost. So, yeah, it's $700, but it's still a third, less than a third of what the Bose cost. I like it that Sonos has figured out latency issues, so you could get a wireless sub, the Sonos sub, and you should get pretty good quality. This thing has a center channel and a left and right channel. A total of 7 speakers in this bar. Sonos really seems to know quality audio, so I'm going to guess that this is going to sound pretty good.
So it's an HDMI cable and a plug into the wall. And
right. And Ethernet if you want the Sonos capability or a Sonos bridge at somewhere else in the house.
Great. Okay, thanks, Leo.
You're welcome. The other advantage, of course, is you can use your Android or iPhone to control it. And I love that. I have my iPad. In fact, everything I have, my computers, my phones, everything has Sonos software on it, which lets me play, you know, music throughout the house. Very cool. Very cool. I like this a lot. And I will give you a full review as soon as I've set this up. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Ray in Greenwood, Indiana is next. Hi, Ray. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. We're having some pretty decent weather for a change around here.
It is spring. We had the vernal equinox 3 days ago. It is spring. Hallelujah.
Yeah, that's what they say, but we're supposed to have a big snowstorm tomorrow, so who knows?
Well, it was spring.
Yeah, for a while it was.
As long as it's, it clears up by the end of May, we're all okay.
Yeah, I hope so. Hey, Leo, I got a problem. I actually paid for some Apple movies from iTunes.
Yeah.
But my problem is I can only play them on iTunes because of this DRM thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, that's right.
Is there any way around that?
Oh, I'm sure there is. There's probably some program out there to remove the copy protection from an iTunes movie. I don't know off the top of my head.
I've tried about a dozen of them, and they can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you buy stuff on iTunes, you have to use an Apple-approved device to play it back.
Right. That's
let me see. Here's a Lifehacker article from January, a couple of months ago. On, let's see. How to remove DRM from iTunes video and purchases. And they talk about probably all the things you mentioned. It doesn't sound like they had much success.
I haven't at all.
Wait a minute. This product works very well. Lifehacker. I'll put this article in the show notes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jet's here. Johnny is our travel guru, johnnyjet.com. He's an expert on getting the most. Hey, Johnny. We got a little bit of a wacky Skype connection here, so we're going to do the best we can with you, Johnny.
Okay, good, because it keeps cutting in and out, but how you doing?
I'm doing great. I saw your tweet about American Airlines, and I was just curious if this is going to be a trend with airlines going forward.
Yeah, actually, last week before I went on your show, I flew from Fort Lauderdale to L.A., and I noticed at the gate next to me that they announced anyone without carry-on bags can now board right after the first class and the elites, which was really surprising. So I almost didn't even send a tweet, but I sent a tweet saying I'm wondering if American Airlines is testing out a new boarding procedure. And American responded right away, as they always do. They're amazing on Twitter. And then a few days later, ABC News contacted me, and they wrote a story, and I cannot believe it's been every single news network. This week I've done interviews with NBC, CNN, you name it.
Wow, that's good, I guess.
What Twitter can do. It's the power of
Twitter.
It's my birthday this week. They're 7th, and I love it.
Well, I think, the Twitter's 7 years old. I think that what's interesting, and it makes sense, the thing that slows boarding down, and it's all the airlines' fault. Once they started charging $25-$50 for every bag you check, people said, well, the heck with that. I'm going to carry them onto the plane. Right. And it is like it's like a bus in Turkey or something where you got 800 people trying to stuff their bags. It slows boarding down. It makes perfect sense. If you're smart enough not to have any carry-on, and you can't have a personal bag, right? But no other carry-on. Get on.
You can have a personal bag. So you can have a briefcase or you can have a handbag, but it can't go in the overbin, supposedly.
Yeah, because that takes so long. Now, I bought on your recommendation.
It does speed up the process.
Sure it does.
I know some people were upset about it, which I don't understand why, because it should be a win-win for everyone.
Well, I'll tell you why.
And they make more money.
I'll tell you why I'm upset about it, only because I'm mad that the airlines charge so much just to check bags. That's when this problem cropped up. It's because the air, and you can't really blame them. The fuel costs have gone through the roof.
I agree with you. But you know what? I think it will be a trend. I think the other, already Southwest and Alaska and Frontier have been testing it. But this is the first major legacy carrier to do it. So I think that's why it was such a big deal.
Between the TSA and the airlines, who wants to travel by plane anymore? I'm going to take the train everywhere. So Johnny, your travel website of the week.
Yeah, so I got this one called PassportAlert.com. So it's such a basic website, but it's pretty brilliant because it offers travelers a place to register, put in their passports expire, and it will notify them 16 months in advance. So it's really good for people who have big families or are forgetful. And because, a lot of countries you go to, you need to have at least 6 months left on your passport before you can enter.
Right. And it takes a while to get a passport. If you're willing to pay, $60 to expedite it, you can get a passport in a few days, right?
You can, but, it's just a hassle. You can also show up to the one of the passport offices, which there aren't that many in America. And there is one in San Francisco, by the way.
Have you ever lost your passport, John?
No. Knock on wood. But
My wife did. Jinx, owe you a Coke. Both of our wives had. My wife lost hers in Paris. Where did Natalie lose hers?
Mine did. I can't hear you right now, but mine did in Estonia 3 years ago on a seaborne cruise, and it was a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. We left Jennifer behind. Henry and I flew home, and Jennifer got 3 extra days in Paris because she lost it on a Friday. We went to the embassy, which, by the way, in Paris is like an armed camp. They're terrified of terrorism, and so it's really tough to get in there to apply for it. It took her 3 days. She did get a replacement passport, but she got an extra 3 days in Paris out of it. Henry and I went home early.
Well, do not lose your passport on the cruise, because when she lost it in Estonia, the ship said, you can't board again. and the ship was leaving in a few hours, and because they said Poland will not let you in, and I said, well, we'll just stay on this on board. They go, I'm sorry, we can't. We'd get huge fines.
Holy
cow. So we almost had to buy last minute tickets to go back to America immediately.
Oh, and, my goodness.
Luckily, someone turned it in. She wrote a big story on the Huffington Post, and it turned out great. It's really worth a read.
Wow. Do not lose your passport. Yes, do hotels not. And cruise lines still say, give us your passport, we'll hold them? And should you do that?
Yes. Yep. When you check in with the cruise line, they actually give you – they take your passport, but they gave it to us in Estonia because they said in some destinations you need to have it walking around, and Estonia is one of them, which no one ever checked it anyway, so it didn't really make sense. And hotels all do ask to look at your passport, and they usually take a photocopy of
it. Is it okay to let them keep it overnight? Sometimes they do that.
And I can't hear you.
Okay, well, I'll find that out next time. Hey, everybody, visit johnnyjet.com. That's his website. You can follow him at johnnyjet on the Twitter. He obviously uses the Twitter to good effect. Happy 7th birthday, by the way, to Twitter. And thank you, Johnny, for joining us. johnnyjet.com. I always carry, and I'm sure Johnny will say this is a good idea, a color Xerox of my passport. Keep it with me at all times in case I lose my passport. It does really, and we had one for Jennifer. It does make it a lot easier to get your passport back. The embassy will, value that. If you didn't have anything at all, it's a little bit harder. And now, thanks to Evernote, which is that great online notebook program, I keep a PDF image of my passport in Evernote. So I always have it when I have my phone or I have my laptop or I have my iPad with me. I always have a high-quality color copy of my passport. And yes, I do keep it encrypted. And my driver's license and all my credit cards, too. My wallet is in Evernote encrypted. So very handy thing to have if you travel. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Lee is in Orange County, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Leo. Can you hear me?
I hear you great. Welcome.
Oh, perfect. So I work at a school, a fabulous school, mm-hmm. and run the website and all the online stuff.
That's great.
And when my son used to go there, I took all the pictures of all the events, so it was not a big deal for me to have pictures of everything. But he doesn't go there anymore, and there are so many fabulous things going on that I don't get to everything. And so I'm wanting your advice on what, I don't know, photo sharing site or Dropbox or whatever, that maybe a half a dozen of us can share all the events for the students and the parents, and then I can maybe choose the best pictures of everything to put on the website. But
yeah, this is a common question, and there are a lot of ways to do it. My favorite, first of all, you want to make it easy for the parents. You want to encourage them to share it. If you make it an obscure site where they have to create an account, it might be less likely for them to put that stuff up there. What I've always done is used Flickr, which is a Yahoo property, and gosh, I think most people who take pictures know about it and probably put pictures on there.
Doesn't Flickr have a size limit?
Well, yeah, but you won't hit it. If you don't pay for the pro version, it's like 10 megabytes a month or something, but you won't hit
it. It's a school, Leo, so we don't want to pay.
No, I understand.
We don't have the budget.
Yeah, but remember, it's for everybody uploading them. So,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you have 100 parents, each of them has whatever that is, 10 megabytes.
Okay.
It won't go to the school's account. But what you'll do is you'll create a group with the school's name. You can make that a private group and then have them put the photos in the group. It's still there. It's still in their accounts. The other one, of course, would be Facebook. I'd hate to require people to join Facebook, though, for something like that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Our last caller, good question. How do I, as a school, a nonprofit, let's say you're a nonprofit, you don't want to spend any money, of course not. How do I create a place to share photos so the parents and family can upload photos and we can have a joint photo sharing site? And I would say there are a few criteria. We'd love something that A, costs nothing, but B, does not require you to go through some sort of onerous sign-up process. You know, Facebook certainly would do this. But I don't think Facebook's the right answer. I think you don't want to make people join Facebook if they don't have an account already. It's a, you know, and there are people who just will not do that. Also, putting pictures on Facebook really kind of gives Facebook those pictures, and I don't know if you're going to want to do that, and I certainly don't think all the parents will want to do that. So let's Facebook would do what you want to do, but let's eliminate that. I mentioned Flickr from Yahoo. That is kind of the original photo sharing site, and I still think very good. I was looking at the what the free account allows you, and it's certainly more than you would ever need. Now, remember, the school has an account, but every parent who's uploading pictures is uploading them on their account. So they can upload as much as 300 megabytes of photos a month with a limit of 30 megabytes per photo. You're not going to... 30 megabytes is more than you'd ever need. Each photo is probably less than a megabyte. So we're talking around 300 photos a month, 10 a day. That's plenty, right? Limitation on video uploads. Only 2 video uploads of 90 seconds or less a month. So that, if you wanted parents to upload video, that might not be the best choice. Photo stream views limited to the 200 most recent images. That could be a problem. But if parents are Flickr Pro folks, they'll be able to see them all. So what you could do for free is create an account for your school. Then create a group with your school's name. You can make that group private, invitation only. Invite the parents to be members of the group. They will have to have a Yahoo account or a Flickr account. It's free, but that may be a drawback. And then they can upload their pictures to their Flickr account and then add them to that group. So you'll and I've done this with the, you know, when we do geek cruises, I always set up a Flickr pool, we call it, photo pool, so everybody can upload their pictures. There are other choices. There's Shutterfly, which is a Kodak site, again, requiring membership. If all your parents have Google accounts or Gmail accounts, then Google might be the best choice. Google has something called Picasa Web, which is free, and I think you get 2 gigabytes or more of storage. You get plenty of storage. Google's starting to migrate Picasa Web over to Google Plus, but it's still private. You have to kind of, I think you have to kind of survey the parents and see what they're comfortable with. Some people will be comfortable with Google, but not with Facebook. Some people will be comfortable with Yahoo, but not with Google. So you might want to ask around. I think those are the 3 most common choices. Somebody mentioned Imgur. Now, Imgur is used, and it's completely free. It's used quite commonly by people who want to share images on Twitter and other places. Imgur. I have not used it for this purpose. You might want to see if you can get a private album there. It is free, but you have to create a registration. It feels to me like this is a community that you probably don't... There's a lot of stuff on Imgur that is not family-friendly, school-friendly. So I'm thinking this is probably not a good choice for a school. Photo Bucket also does the same thing. But again, I have the same qualms about Photo Bucket because it's so often... It's free image hosting, but it's so often used to host inappropriate stuff. Photo Bucket might be the right... They do videos, too. This is, you know, somebody ought to set something up for schools. If I were SmugMug, this is the service I use is SmugMug, but it is not free. I pay $140 a year for it. And a lot of pros use SmugMug. And it's a great way to share photos. A lot of bridal photographers do it to put the photos of the bride up on a private gallery. People can order prints and so forth. It's great if you have an account. Or maybe a parent has an account, then it's free for everybody else to use. They do have to create an account, but that's free for everyone else to use. I like SmugMug a lot, but I think that may be something a little more complicated and certainly more expensive than you want to pay. Somebody suggested Tumblr. That's possible. Make a Tumblr, a free Tumblr, and then make it private or invitation only. That's probably a good idea. As you can see, there are a lot of choices here. My favorite, though, I think off the top of my head, Flickr seems like the one that's going to be the most appealing to your families the least trouble, and is absolutely no cost. Anybody has a suggestion, give me a ring. Maybe there's a better choice out there. I know we have a lot of photographers solving this problem themselves. 888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Mike in Southern California, you're next. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. How you, Mike?
Great. You know, I have to admit, everything that I've heard, I've been listening to for years, and I followed your suggestions on my cell phone, my Nod 32 on my computer, and you're just fantastic.
Blame me then, all right?
Yeah, no. You're to me, you're like the god of electronics.
Oh, gosh, okay? I'm blushing.
If you don't know about it, I don't think anybody knows about it, okay?
Well, between me and the chat room and the millions of people listening, I think that's probably true.
Well, I'm not just kissing your butt. I mean, you are really good.
All right. So, well, what can I do for you now? now I better help you.
Yeah, I went out and bought a sling box because I'm a truck driver now, okay? So I want to watch my TV on my computer in my truck.
It's the only way to do it. It's an awesome idea, yeah.
But the thing about it is I just hooked it up and I just finally got on the website. But now I bought the unit, the 350 unit. Okay. Now, is that infrared to my router with that little IR?
No, the IR blaster is merely for it's a remote control unit so that you can have it change the channels. You have to have Ethernet for the Slingbox 350. If you want to go wireless with Wi-Fi, you need the Slingbox 500.
Oh, man. Are you serious?
Yeah. There's an advantage to going with the 350, which is that Ethernet's going to be, you know, this is, by the way, this is sitting in your house. This isn't in the truck. You know that.
Right, I know that, but I mean, I have my router is in another room.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this was a disadvantage, and that's why one of the reasons they came out with the 500. The 500 also has a high def HDMI connection. But the advantage of doing it with Ethernet, I'm going to tell you a solution. You don't have to send this back. I'm going to tell you how you can fix this. The advantage of doing it with a hard wire is it's going to be better picture than Wi-Fi will. But the disadvantage is you're not next to the router.
Right. The router's in another room.
Right. You can use, and I know a lot of people do it, power line networking. In fact, Slingbox even sells the power line networking boxes to do this. And so what that uses is your router has a little thing that plugs into the wall, the power. You put an Ethernet port from your router, your Ethernet cable from your router into that thing. And then the other end by the Slingbox, you plug in the other end into the wall and another Ethernet jacked into your Slingbox. And it uses the AC wiring in your house to transport the network. In the old days, this was terrible. Huh? Yeah, Radio Shack will have it. It's called power line networking.
Okay, I think I've heard of that before. Somebody told me about that, where it makes your whole house a wired...
That's right. And it works well. It doesn't work well across a junction box if you have multiple power setups in your house, but most houses works great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by our good friends at Rackspace.com. Have I talked about Rackspace in the show? I think I have. I can tell you one thing. We've been trying to get Rackspace on our shows for a long time because I'm a big fan of Rackspace. I have been for years. It's where my friend Robert Scobel works. Todd Clint works there. But I also like Rackspace's philosophy. So Rackspace is a hosting company. Not just websites, though. They can host apps for you. They can host your databases and so forth. Very reliable and incredible support. They've got what they call fanatical support. And it really is true. These guys care deeply about you and about your relationship with Rackspace. But they also support Open, which I'm a big fan. They're the Open Cloud company. So if you're looking at a cloud computing solution for your business, whether it's code, database, website, look for one that supports an open solution. If you use proprietary technology, and a lot of these cloud solutions are proprietary, it means it's very expensive and complicated to move your data if you want to leave. It really is lock-in, not with Rackspace. They co-founded OpenStack and now run the world's largest open cloud. That means you're not locked into a single provider. What you do on Rackspace can be moved anywhere. Your apps, your code, your websites can move between multiple OpenStack-based clouds, public or private, on-premises or hosted. So build what you want, where you want, and how you want it with Rackspace.com, all backed by their world-renowned fanatical support. You try it today. You can download that Open Cloud free at Rackspace.com/open. Rackspace.com/open. And I thank you, Rackspace, and a big tip of the hat for the great job you have done. Really an amazing company, a company to be proud of. Rackspace.com/open. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players. None of that stuff is still available, but if it were, we could talk about it. It's so funny to watch as I do this show. I've been doing it since 1991, 22 years. Yes, 1991 was 22 years ago. That by itself is a stunning fact. And I've seen things change a lot. We didn't really talk about the internet at all when we started. It was about PCs, Windows, what is it, 3? I think it was 3.0 or 3.1, DOS 5, little Mac stuff, because I loved Macs even then. We didn't talk about gadgets, because there weren't anything, you know, wasn't really anything very interesting. Oh, that Motorola flip phone, that's hot. You got to get that. No. Then the internet came along, mid-90s, started talking about that. Got more and more complicated for a while, you know, about 5-6 years ago. Oh, it was MP3 players and camcorders and digital. It was all that stuff. But now it's simplified a lot because these smartphones have gotten smarter and smarter. Now this computer in your pocket does pretty much everything. You certainly don't need a camcorder anymore because your digital still camera does brilliant video. You don't need a GPS device anymore because your phone does that. You don't need an MP3 player anymore because your phone does that. You may not even need a camera anymore because your phone does that. PDAs, remember those? Don't talk about them so much anymore either. I do have in fact, I'm waving it around, the new BlackBerry Z10. BlackBerry sent me this for a review unit because I certainly wouldn't purchase it on my own. You know, it's nice if you're in the BlackBerry world, and I know a lot of people are. If you use BlackBerry Messenger or you have a BlackBerry server at work or your work insists on a BlackBerry server, there's lots of reasons why you might want to use one of these. And there's some things that are cool. The BlackBerry Hub is a unified messaging system for text, phone calls, Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff. You could tie it all into that, and that's kind of cool. It's a little too much for me. I get so much email, it's just so swamped, you know. But the Hub is neat, a neat way to see your calendar, you know, kind of in one glance, everything that's going on. The front page is nice. There's no buttons on this phone. Everything is swiping in from the left to the right, the top, the bottom. So it's a very clean user interface. Keyboard roughly as good as an Apple keyboard. It's got predictions built in. BlackBerry kind of pioneered that, and they still do a very nice job. There's just nothing to write home about, and I certainly wouldn't, unless you're in the BlackBerry world, I wouldn't buy this because of the lack of apps, mostly, over even a Windows phone. Or certainly, if you're looking at an Android or an iPhone, it's probably a better choice than the BlackBerry phone. Again, unless you're, for some reason, using BlackBerry or your business does. I'm more interested in the Q10, the next phone from BlackBerry, which will use the same, I think, quite nice operating system, will also have a keyboard, a physical keyboard, which is what made put BlackBerry on the map. And I was a big BlackBerry fan in the early 2000s. In fact, my last phone before the iPhone in 2007 was a BlackBerry Curve. But I think BlackBerry's kind of been left in the dust by the latest developments. This is a good attempt, but you know, it's hard to get into this business now when iPhone and Android dominate so entirely. 8888-ASK Leo is the number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want some buying advice, I'll help you buy a GPS or an MP3 player if you really want. Makes my life a lot easier, I have to say, because I used to have to talk about, you know, what's the best MP3 player? Is it an iPod, a SanDisk, Sansa, a Diamond? There was hundreds of them. It's a lot easier now. Wynn in Moore Park, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Wynn.
How are you?
I'm good. Welcome. Thanks for holding on.
Oh, thank you. I've been having a fight with Outlook and my email servers on the webmail, and you're my last resort.
Uh-oh. Now, let me clarify. This is Outlook, the program, or Outlook.com, the website?
No, the program, part of the MS Office.
The part of the office. And it's 2013, the new Outlook. All right.
I'm sorry, it's 2010.
2010, the last version. All right. What's going on?
Well, I first started into this with my Yahoo account. A while back, I was with Pac Bell. AT&T took over. I combined my Yahoo account with my Pac Bell account. And then I left AT&T and went to Roadrunner.
Time Warner's cable service, yeah.
So I kept it that way because I like to use POP server, POP 3, because I like to download my emails onto my own computer.
Right. That's the sole advantage of POP 3 is you can clear the server off. There's nothing on there. It's all on your hard drive.
Well, I keep them both, really.
Well, it's not a good – POP 3 is not a good choice if that's what you want to do. But anyway, continue on.
Anyway, here I am. All of a sudden, my Yahoo account, I can get on the webmail, but I can't download it onto my computer anymore. Don't know why.
Does it give you an error message or just doesn't do it?
Well, it does with when I had the AT&T account, the Pac Bell account. And
do you get an error message or does it just not do it?
It tells me incorrect file name, username, and password.
Okay, so you want to delete that account completely from your Outlook. And re-enter all the details. Obviously, the details are not correct. You do have to have, I believe, Yahoo Pro. You have to pay for Yahoo for it to use POP3. Am I right, chat room? Does the POP3 work with the free Yahoo? I'm thinking you have to pay for POP access. So if you haven't, you know, obviously you did because it worked. If you maybe your Yahoo Pro account expired, then you need to pay that money. And then your POP3 will work fine. I bet you that's what's going on. So check your settings. It's telling you your details are wrong. But what may really be happening is Yahoo maybe say, no, you don't have Yahoo Pro. You cannot download POP3 mail. My suggestion, by the way, is to get rid of Yahoo Mail. I think Microsoft's new Outlook.com is good, but I use Gmail. Gmail's free. It's unlimited. It supports POP3 and IMAP. It can collect your mail from all the other sources into one central thing. I just think Google Mail is so good. It does a great job with fighting spam as well, and that's because it's using a collaborative filter system. Now, yeah, Microsoft's made a point with this Scroogled campaign that Google is reading your email. I mean, okay, yeah, so is everybody who's doing spam protection. They have to read your email looking for spam keywords. The difference is what Google does is when they get all those indexed keywords, not only are they getting spam, you know, fighting in there, but they're also looking at them and putting ads on the page that kind of match those keywords. If that bothers you, then use Outlook Mail. Then you'll get ads that match nothing, random ads that have nothing to do with your life. But I keep getting ads for ducting, like, you know, for for some reason, Outlook has decided that I'm in the HVAC business, that I'm putting in air conditioning, and I need to buy ducting in 100-foot rolls or something. And so the ads I get on Outlook are bizarre. I guess it's a good thing they're not looking at my email for that. They're still looking at my email because they have to. That's how spam fighting works. I'm almost prefer to have the targeted ads I get on Gmail because at least they're not random. And by the way, does anybody even look at those ads? It's just a part of the page you just can't use. It's a wasted space area. You know, you can pay for an Outlook account and you don't get those ads. Let me just check. I haven't checked my Outlook account in a while. What am I getting? Okay, baritone ukulele. The ads I get are so strange. Baritone ukulele, a 4-foot privacy mesh screen for my fence. I think they think I'm a contractor. Fiberglass Evercoat polyester gel. So these are, not only is it wasted space, but there's things, I might buy a ukulele. Yeah, let me buy a ukulele. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 8888 Ask Leo. If you have a comment, a question, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech, I'd love to talk it with you. Dana in Griffin, Georgia. Hi, Dana.
Hey, Leo. I've talked to you a while back. You helped me with my ozone phone at one point. But my friend of mine passed away in December, and I got an Acer Aspire 1 computer.
Uh-huh.
Well, I did the restore. I'm a blind person, by the way. That's why I'm saying that, because my buddy, he was a genius with fixing this stuff. Well, I did the system restore from the hard drive. You know how you can bring it back
to That's a good idea, because you want to eliminate all his private stuff. That's a nice thing to do.
Well, it was my computer. It wasn't his.
Oh. Okay, so you didn't inherit this computer, but this guy used to help you with it.
Yes, sir, because he decided.
Got it.
Okay, now I put a copy of Windows on. I did not format. I formatted it to the C, but I didn't mess up the utility folder or partition. But now I can't get any sound. Where can I get sound drivers for this thing? I don't know which ones to get. I see thousands of audio.
Well, the first thing to do is to run the Windows update from XP. You probably did that already, right?
No, I hadn't tried that.
Oh, well, you got to do that anyway, because you're not secure running Windows XP. It's very, 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 very insecure unless you run all those updates now. So the first thing you should do before you... Oh, golly, yeah.
On the internet, though.
Your late friend would have told you that. So you got to go online. Are you online?
I think my girlfriend got it, the wireless going, yes.
Okay, so get online and run Windows Update and just run it like till there's no tomorrow. In fact, run it. It might take a day. It might take many reboots, but you're going to get Service Pack 3. You're going to get all of the updates so that you're secure, because you're not secure until then.
Okay, yeah, I know that.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that might happen in there, those are the critical updates, but there may be an optional update, and you should have your girlfriend look and see for the sound card. Because normally what happens is Microsoft says, oh, and I have the latest drivers, too. That's part of the update process. So I would bet just running update will get you those sound drivers. If they don't, Dana, then you're going to have to go to the Acer site and hope, this is a pretty old computer, hope that they're still offering... they probably are, in their support section, downloads for that computer. And you're probably going to want to, it's a laptop, you probably you may not see sound card, you may not see Ethernet, you may just see general driver downloads, or you may see motherboard driver downloads, but those are what you need, because the sound is on the motherboard, and if you have the right install, everything will work fine. So Acer will have them if Microsoft does not. But Microsoft usually does a pretty good job of getting all the right drivers installed. But you'll find that in Windows Update. It won't be in the critical updates, because it's not critical. It'll just be in the optional updates. So, you know, get your girlfriend or somebody cited, because it's if you've got a screen reader working, I guess you could use that. There's a long list of stuff. And find that thing that you need. Microsoft usually will fix that for you. I'm sorry about your friend, but I'm glad you got somebody who can... cited who can help you get this set up. There's also volunteer agencies in almost every area, like Lighthouse for the Blind and so forth, that will help you do this too. They'll have accessibility experts who can help you get that all set up. Jim in Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jim. Oh, I should mention, while we're getting Jim on the line, that in the chat room is telling me this, really old computer, sometimes Linux is a good choice, and there's a version of Linux called Mint that probably will give you sound and everything else, including video playback and so forth on that Acer 1, Aspire 1. So if you never do get sound working with Windows, try Linux Mint. Hey, Jim.
Hey, yo.
How are you? Welcome.
Good. First time caller, long time listener.
Thank you.
I'm a pretty tech guy. I make my living in the tech industry, but I recently acquired a Samsung Galaxy S3.
Yes. How do you like it?
I do. It's
best-selling phone out there, I think, now. I think it's eclipsed the iPhone for sales.
Yeah, and one of the things I don't like is I got a big hand, and then when I wrap around the screen, I'll accidentally touch something and launch an app.
No, you need to get the Note 2 then. That's even wider. That's what I use. It's a massive phone. It's hard. Unless you've got a basketball player's hands. It'd be hard to wrap it around in a Note 2.
So my question is, I rooted the thing, and I wanted to know what you thought about hotspot apps to be able to tether. The only thing that I've got, the computer that I'm trying to do this with has the ability to connect to a Wi-Fi spot, but it can't connect in an ad hoc mode, which is one of the things that I found. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, and who's your carrier?
AT&T.
AT&T will, I believe you don't even need to route it to put tethering, to get tethering working on there. Hotspotting is actually what you want, right? Or no, you want tethering?
I wanted to use the phone as a hotspot so I could have...
Tethering is wired, so you'd use a USB cable. Hotspot is, it's like a MiFi. It's a Wi-Fi access point all on its own. And almost all Android phones will do that out of the box. You just have to pay a little extra to the phone company because they know now you're going to be using this for your internet access. So I would look in the settings. It's on every Galaxy S2 I've ever used. There's a right there in the settings hotspot. You turn it on and you'll have to give it a Wi-Fi password. It'll actually provide one, and then you should be able to use that phone's internet connection. But generally, I can't remember what AT&T's cost is. It might be $20 more a month. Generally, you'll have to tell the phone company that that's how you're going to use it before they'll let you do that.
Yeah, I don't mind doing that. The problem is that when I do that, it sets up the Wi-Fi as an ad hoc connection as opposed to a...
infrastructure. Okay. Yeah.
Right. And one of the computers that I am trying to connect to it...
That doesn't sound right. When I use mine, it shows up as a Wi-Fi access point, an infrastructure Wi-Fi access point. You're saying your computer...
The computer is locked down, so it won't connect as an ad hoc. And the only thing I found on the...
But it shouldn't be. It should just see it as a Wi-Fi access spot, just like your router. I don't know why it's doing ad hoc. You must be using a piracy program like Foxfy or something. What are you using for the Wi-Fi?
Well, the only thing that I found that worked right now is a USB tethered, literally tethered connection, and that's using Easy Tether.
So your S3, is it locked to AT&T? It's from AT&T? Does it say AT&T on the phone?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Okay, if it says AT&T on the phone, then just call AT&T, say please turn on hotspotting. It will not be ad hoc. It will be a standard Wi-Fi access point, which you can log into from, I think, up to 5 different devices. Works great. Hey, let me talk a little bit about stamps.com. This will cut through the clutter when it comes to mailing. If you're just sending out Christmas cards once a year, this is not for you. Well, maybe it is, actually. Just depends how many you send out. If you're the White House, this is for you. In fact, you can tell a lot of people, you'll be surprised if you look at your mail, even the envelopes, you can tell at stamps.com. It'll have this special indicia printed onto the envelope with a barcode and stuff. It may have your address, the logo of the company. It's really cool. Stamps.com lets you buy and print U.S. postage with your computer, your printer. You do not need a postage meter. That's old school. Nothing, no special ink or anything. Just your inkjet or laser printer. Your computer and an account with stamps.com. And by the way, I have a special offer for you, which I'll show you in a minute. When you sign up for that offer, you'll get a USB scale. So you plop the letter or package on the scale, any class of mail, media mail, anything. It'll tell you exactly what it is. It'll even print out a label for you. You can print right on the envelope if you're just mailing envelopes. That's cool. If you're sending priority mail or express mail, you get discounts you don't get at the post office. And it'll send an email to your recipient with a tracking code and everything. It's completely automated. Takes addresses from QuickBooks, from your address book. If you're seling on Etsy or you use Amazon or eBay, PayPal, it'll automatically take the address from the website. If you're doing international mailing, it'll fill out the right forms. And then you don't even have to, at that point, get up and go to the post office. You just stay at your desk. The mail carrier comes, picks it up. Everything's done. You can even schedule free pickups at your convenience. I mean, the post office loves stamps.com. If you don't love going to the post office, you'll love it too. Try it right now. We have a no-risk trial offer. Visit stamps.com. Now, on the front page, you'll see an $80 offer. Don't do that one. I got a better one. Click the microphone. It's in the upper right-hand corner of the page. And enter the promo code TECHGUY, two words, T-E-C-H space G-U-Y. Now you get a $110 bonus offer. You get more free postage, $55 free postage to use over the first few months of your account. You get the digital scale. And you get, of course, a month trial of stamps.com. Try it right now. This is the pro tip for anybody who does a lot of mailing. Stamps.com. Yeah, it's March Madness, baby. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by... Who was it brought to you by, Kyle? You told me and I forgot already.
Stamps.com.
Stamps.com. Buy and print real U.S. postage from your computer and your printer. You don't even need to make a trip to the post office anymore. Just get stamps.com. Try it today. Click the radio microphone in the upper right-hand corner for a very special no-risk trial offer, including free postage, $55 worth of free postage, when you use my name, Leo, at stamps.com. Stamps.com. They could rewrite that song. .com. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Tony in La Habra, California is next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tony. I'm great. How are you?
Good, thanks. Hey, listen, I have a question. I bought a domain name, and I want to start a free email service using my domain name on a shared server, and I'm having a hard time finding anything, and I was hoping you might be able to enlighten me.
Yeah, that might be a little tough because... the server companies, the hosting companies might be a little worried that you what you want to do is spam. So I understand what you want to do. Maybe you got such a cool domain, you know, like email.me or something, and you could probably sell it that way. You don't want to host it yourself, right? You want to put it on a server.
I hosted email before, and I got attacked too much.
Right. Good. Maybe now you understand why hosting companies don't want your business. I don't know. It would have to be somewhere that knew you were going to do this, you know, and it's simple. You set up PostFix or there's a lot of different email programs out there you could set up on there.
Well, they don't mind if I use I'll probably have to get a virtual private server. They said I can do it as long as I do that. But I just can't find any software to install on the server to do this.
Oh, well, you got to know. So have you ever set up an email server before? You have. What did you use before?
I had an Apache server running out of my house, and I can't remember what I used, but I set it up.
PostFix is very popular. Okay. What do we use? Is Bear in our service, our sysadmin, is he in there in our chat room? Because I can't remember. I don't think we use PostFix anymore. We use SoftLayer. Which is, I can highly recommend them, and they don't pay me any money. I pay them thousands of dollars a month. But that's who runs our servers. And I think they're excellent. Oh, yeah, I think we do. Squirrel Mail. That is, in fact, what we use now. So PostFix is the old Unix way of doing things.
So I can just look at the online email services that my provider gives me, and I can find.
Yeah, you can use. You know, they'll run a PostFix, or they'll run a server for you if you want. But if you want to buy a server that you put a server on, you know, buy a machine. See, server is being used in two ways here. the server hardware, rent the server hardware for somebody like SoftLayer. Then you have access to that server, you can put. You could put a web mail or a regular mail server. Do you want it to be web mail or do you want it to be forwarding, that kind of thing?
Web mail.
Yeah, Squirrel Mail is a good choice for that.
Good. Well, you've given me some starting points. Thank you.
Yeah. And we're really happy with SoftLayer. I think they've given us above and beyond service. Rackspace, of course, our sponsor, is very good. So there's a lot of choices. Bill in Michigan saying the Twit MX point to Google. That's right, because we are Google Apps user. So for Twit Mail, that's my company, we use Google Apps. But for my own personal mail, I use something else, which I'm not going to tell you about because it's private. Danny, because I don't want to get attacked. Danny in Southern California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
Hey.
Hey,
I was in your chat room last week. I left my computer away for a minute, and my kid got out there and said some stupid things.
And now you're banned. And the way we ban people, because we don't know who you are, we ban you by your IP address. So if you're in the chat room and you do something bad, and we ban you, we'll ban your entire computer. So if your kid does something bad, you're banned too. And I don't, the chat room is run as a volunteer effort by some excellent folks, including Dan and Brad and Canuck and Cheeto and Can We Bowl Please and Hip and Houdini and all those Leggett and Mark and Life's a Zoo and Marmot and Mick and Rubicant and Scooter X and Sly Ferret, Tegs and TTK. They're great people. And we're extremely careful in our chat room because, you know, chat can get out of control. So we have very strict rules. When you log into chat for the first time, you'll be sent to a website, j.mp/chatrules, to read our rules. I strongly encourage you to do so. It's on our wiki. And any violation of those rules would cause immediate banning, as you might expect, because we want it to be family-friendly and safe. Generally, though, unless your kid did something really horrible, the ban is just temporary. Mods, what do you do by the way, they're banning people right now, of course, because people, as soon as this topic comes up, start going getting a little out of control. How long is the typical, you know, kick ban? Is it for a day or two? I don't think it's very long. So you'll probably get back in just a little time. They're saying that information is classified. They can't tell you. Is there an appeals process that Danny can go through? He says, it's my kid. It was just my kid. Well, as you can as you see if you go into chat, apparently the ban can be for a variety of lengths of time, anywhere from 2 weeks to a month. I can't go around them. I don't want to go around them. I empower them absolutely because we need to keep the chat room a safe place. So don't appeal to me. Appeal to them. And how do you appeal to them? I have no idea, but maybe in the rules at j.mp/chatrules there is some information about that. Doesn't look like there is. Let me move on because it's kind of an inside topic, not really very much used to anybody. Deanna in Rancho Santa Margarita. Hi, is it Deanna?
Hey, it's Deanna.
Hi, Deanna.
Yes, hi. Great show until you started singing.
I am a very good singer. I am hurt by that. Not notice I don't make my living singing. Well,
that's funny. So earlier,
was I that bad, Deanna? Really?
No. Okay. I was laughing.
I think I can carry a tune in a bucket.
I thought, what are they drinking during that?
Yeah, well, we have way too much fun.
During Handel's show this morning, I heard a promo for you that you were going to talk about notes for different note apps for different phones.
Yeah, and ironically, at the very time I did that, Google released its note app. Yeah. So do you use an Android or an iPhone?
Android. And I currently use InkPad for my notes, and I'm not really thrilled with it.
My favorite, and I would, it's free, so there's no reason not to try it. It's on every platform. See, one of the things I want with a notes app is, yes, I want to keep them on my phone, but I also want it to be on my desktop, my tablet, everywhere I go, so that when I take a note on the phone, I have access to it without having to pull out my phone, right?
Right.
So the program I recommend absolutely is Evernote.
Evernote
is on every platform, Windows Phone, Android, iPhone, tablets, desktops, it's even on BlackBerry, it's everywhere. And so it's free. There is a pro version. You don't need to pay for it, though. I would start by trying that. Now, do you just type your notes? Do you speak them? Do you handwrite them?
No, I just type them in.
Yeah. So Evernote will be fine for that. It does allow you to record notes or to take pictures and embed them in your notes. Much of this Google has started to offer with Google Keep, but it's Android and desktop only. I think for right now, the creme de la creme is Evernote. That's the one I've tried.
No, folded up in my pocket. Yeah, don't laugh. It's been 2 months. I still got it. Sometimes after.
And if you put it in Evernote, you'd have it forever. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our Gizwiz is here. The gadget guy, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for many, many moons. And now he's a gadget hound, too. And he joins us every week to share his favorite technology gadgets with us. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm super fine. Thank you very much.
What do you got for us today?
You know, I have a little gadget from Matrix Audio. And actually, you told me about a little gadget you have from Matrix Audio. I have the Cube. The Cube is their little pocket speaker, a little bit small. If you took a golf ball and squared off the round part and you had a square golf ball, which is not recommended for playing professionally.
Doesn't roll well.
No, it doesn't roll well, but it sounds great. So it's a tiny little speaker.
Which sounds amazing given its size. I mean, it's so tiny.
Exactly. It sounds amazing. Rechargeable battery, charges in 2 hours, plays for 8 hours. Now, this one...
It connects via a wire. You have to use a USB connection.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a two-in-one cable. So if you wanted to run endlessly while you're watching movies, plug it into USB, and then the other end of the dongle goes into the headphone jack, and then it connects via USB to the little Cube speaker. But you told me about their Bluetooth Matrix Audio 1.
Yeah.
There it is, yeah.
It's the same idea. And this one is like a rounded golf ball. It's only flat on the bottom.
Right. And yours opens up.
Yeah, you unscrew it, and then it kind of accordions out, and that gives you much better bass because I guess it's using that as a bass sound. And now this thing is Bluetooth, so you pair it with your phone. It has a little microphone as well as a speaker. You charge it via USB because it's got a USB port on it, and the sound quality, it's good for a Bluetooth phone. It's fairly loud, but it's kind of cool because you can use this as a speakerphone. I just put this on the desk and talk into it, and it's a pretty credible speakerphone. Absolutely. And they're not expensive either.
No, they're not. Thanks to Amazon, you know, the retail is $50, but on Amazon it's $38. And the retail on the one you have, the Bluetooth hands-free phone, is $80, and that's $47 on Amazon.
That's not bad. And I think in an office, you wouldn't want to use this in your car, but in an office, this would be a good choice.
Or the hotel room.
Hotel room, right.
Yeah,
right.
You're sitting there and you want to make some calls, and you don't want to hold a handset.
Somebody says it looks like the Snitch from Harry Potter. I guess it does, doesn't it? I caught the Snitch.
I get the Snitch.
So it's
where's my salad?
It's Matrix Audio.
Yes, matrixaudio.com.
Cool. And so I have the Bluetooth, and you have, and I have to say the sound quality is the best on this little metal
the
speaker.
The little aluminum Cube guy is astounding.
Yeah, and it's really good looking, too, and easy. You could literally just stick it in your pocket or purse and have some pretty decent.
And run off with it, yeah.
Yes, that's what I did. That's how I got mine. Dick is at gizwiz.biz. That's his website. If you want to go there, you can play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. All you got to do is look at a picture. It looks like a towel ring. It's obviously not. Figure out what that gadget is. Truth is, it doesn't matter if you can figure it out because there's 12 magazines for the right answer, 24 for the best clever wrong answer. So really, your creativity is what's going to make a difference here. Gizwiz.biz. Play the What the Heck Is It contest, and we'll see you. Dick's going to stick around after the radio show for our GizFizz at twit.tv, and then Tuesday we'll be back with our GizWiz. We do a feature.
Something good?
We do a feature on the GizWiz podcast, or Junk I Buy at SkyMall, and I just got the DJ Scratch Mixer from Jensen.
Oh, that looks good.
Yeah, you plug your iPhone.
Is it possible?
It will be the first, if it is, first good thing I got from SkyMall.
No, I'm sort of keeping track. I think you have about 27 items, and I think three of them
are... A few of them were good.
This could be four.
Yeah, the zip line's pretty good. I thought the human, the human elastic band? That was good.
Yeah, I'm getting complaints that there's not enough things to injure Leo. That was the last complaint.
Well, it started with the orbit wheels, which that really was a crazy idea. But I think the human slingshot, that's pretty fun.
No, that is good. That's good.
Yeah. All right, Dick, we'll stick around. We'll see you in a little bit. Rich is in New York City, our next call. Hi, Rich. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I'm calling because I had two Western Digital 2 terabyte hard drives that failed on me.
Ooh.
While using Windows XP, and it might, I'm assuming it's a size issue.
You know, I use Western Digital drives too. Bigger is more prone to failure, I think, because you're packing more data onto the same size platters. But I don't think, you know, I think essentially hard drive reliability hasn't changed much. That you had bad luck, in other words.
Yeah, so they've replaced it. And now I'm considering doing a NAS box, which, by the way, I formatted the drive to an NTFS file system, and XP doesn't even see it.
No, NTFS is newer than XP.
Yeah. So
so you have to go back to FAT32 for XP.
Right. So I'm thinking of maybe building a NAS box.
Now, a NAS box, would it be connected directly to the computer or connected over the Internet? I mean, over the Ethernet?
I'm thinking over the Ethernet.
That's going to be a lot slower than a computer, a hard drive in your computer, you understand?
Yeah, yeah, but I'm going to mostly just do backups and then...
Actually, wait a minute. XP does do NTFS. What am I thinking? It was Windows 98 that didn't do NTFS. You should be able to see NTFS drives.
Yeah, I think it's my computer. I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe there's something else going on. No, of course. I don't know what I was thinking. NT is the giveaway in that. It's the NT file system. XP is a version of NT. Maybe you need. Do you need a later service pack? Now, maybe that's the issue. I don't know.
Could be. I'm not sure. I was having recent issues with it, so I might just eliminate this computer altogether. But anyway, so I'm considering either building a NAS. Or going with a Synology 413J.
Yeah, that's a NAS too, really. But
yeah, a lot of people are saying it might be easier to just buy.
I like Synology a lot. Building a NAS, you mean like getting an old computer and putting NAS hardware, software on that, and making a NAS that way?
Yeah, and I thought maybe FreeNAS or
yeah, it's a great FreeNAS is great. It's a great project if you're fairly sophisticated. Absolutely, and it will definitely save you money.
Right, and what's the deal with DFS file systems? Is that for the NAS itself, or can that be accessed?
Well, the NAS hides the file system. It's just providing the data over Ethernet. So you'll be using SMB to share those disks, and Windows won't care what the file system was on the NAS. ZFS is a very interesting, very modern file system originally from Sun, now from Oracle, that I like a lot. You know, has some real advantages. It doesn't matter what the file system is on the NAS because it's hidden.
Right.
Again, this is kind of techie. You need to know what you're doing with all of this. But a great project. You'd learn a lot.
Yeah, I'm considering it because it's cheaper. But, of course, I'm thinking it might be easy to just buy Synology.
I'm a fan of Synology. I use Synology NASs. I also use Ready NAS, which is a Netgear product. I've been very happy with them. But if you are a hobbyist and you want to learn a lot about how this stuff works, do it yourself. Nothing wrong with that. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. See you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.